Well, welcome back to HealthLink On Air, brought to you each week by Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. And this is Tricia Torrey, Every Patient's Advocate. I'm here with Dr. Gregory Eastwood from Upstate Center for Bioethics and Humanities, and Dr. Michael Zuber, Assistant Professor of Ophthalmology at Upstate and a researcher with stem cells. Welcome back, gentlemen. We're discussing difficult decisions in healthcare, the ethics that surround the topic of stem cells, and we've just spent a segment of the show talking about the science behind stem cells, what they mean in our terminology. Now let's talk about some of the promise of stem cell therapies. Why are we doing any of this, Dr. Eastwood?
Well, we're doing it because we want to make people better.
Okay.
And there are a huge number of issues or diseases or disorders that we think might respond to stem cell therapy. Let me give you some examples. Most cancers. Cancers of the gastrointestinal tract, colon cancer, lung cancer.
And you're talking about curing these cancers?
Curing the cancers. Now, I would point out that stem cell therapy also is closely aligned to genetic therapy, which holds great promise for these areas,
too. Personalized medicine.
We talked about genetic therapy a few sessions ago.
That's right.
Another very large area is in neurologic disorders, such as Parkinson's disease, Lou Gehrig's disease, which is amyotrophic lateral sclerosis,
to give it a technical
term.
It's easy for you to say.
ALS. Multiple sclerosis, stroke, spinal cord injury, things like that.
What about things like Alzheimer's disease?
Well, I think perhaps, but I think the ones I mentioned are probably more likely to respond to stem cell therapy.
And then what about things that people run into chronically, like diabetes?
Diabetes is a huge issue, of course. Many, many people have diabetes. More people are developing it every day, and that certainly, we think, can respond to stem cell therapy.
If I understand correctly, the idea here would be to discover what part of someone actually creates that problem, what it is about diabetes, for instance, or one of these neurological problems, and you're actually replacing the bad cells that have created it with the good cells. Is that too simplistic, Dr. Zuber?
No, that's exactly right. I mean, a lot of diseases are caused by the malfunction or the death of a certain cell type, and what stem cell therapy is trying to do is to make those cells for replacement.
And what about, Dr. Eastwood, what about something like heart disease?
Well, again, heart disease is a very large issue for many, many people.
Absolutely.
Heart attacks occur in both men and women, high frequency. There's a recent report in the Journal of the American Medical Association, JAMA, about the injection of bone marrow cells, which contains stem cells, into the arteries, the coronary arteries, of people who have chronic poor blood supply to their heart, and they were not candidates for surgery to correct that.
So typically they would have had like bypass surgery or something?
Ordinarily they would have had bypass surgery, which is a common operation, but they were not candidates for that. And the injection of these stem cells seemed to improve the heart function.
It did. So in effect, I mean, stem cell therapy at its epitome would be everybody could live forever.
Oh, there are many other factors going on. That's a whole different discussion about, you know, we really are programmed to die.
Yes.
Our cells are programmed to die, and our bodies are programmed to die.
Dr. Zuber, talk to us about some of the research you're doing. Yours is all in ophthalmology in the eye. Are there any, can we see any practical applications yet for stem cells?
In humans, not yet. I mean, well, let me rephrase that. There are examples of stem cells being used to heal the blinding eye. Recently, there's been some stuff in the media talking about a corneal transplant. So now, corneal transplants have been done for a long time, but now, more recently, it's been shown that you can take corneal stem cells and transplant them to a patient and get their cornea to heal and
so
allow them to see again.
Yeah. Someone who was blind is now seeing again out of an eye?
Yes.
Based on these stem cells. And Dr. Eastwood, are there other examples of places that stem cells are being used now? I mean, specifically on human beings?
Well, I think the traditional one, or at least become traditional, is in bone marrow transplants. Many people are familiar with that. They've had them or they have relatives who have had bone marrow transplants. And basically what that is that transplants, what we said were multipotent cells.
And so those are the ones that have limited capacity.
To grow new bone marrow.
Aha.
And those are used for a variety of disorders.
And, you know, I believe that we've talked about that in relation to children's cancers.
children's cancers, but breast cancer, other kinds of cancers.
So there really are applications already for stem cells, mostly the multipotent kind, or are some of the pluripotent too, or are we not quite there yet?
Mostly the multipotent. I mean, that's the whole point, is to get the cells towards a fate that they're not going to go off and become a muscle cell when you want them to generate a retinal cell, for example.
All right.
And there's two other, we should also mention that there are, I mean, things are always moving, and right now there are two clinical trials going on, human clinical trials, one in the U.S. and one in Scotland, addressing the use of embryonic stem cells to heal stroke patients as well as patients with spinal cord problems.
Very good. All right, so now we've gotten the science behind us. We kind of understand that. We've got some of the promise, what stem cells could do, all else being equal, if nobody had any question marks about where they came from, some of the things that they may be able to cure for us in the future. But there are definitely ethical issues, and we need to talk about what those would be. And most of them, if I understand correctly, stem from, no pun intended, where the stem cells come from, the origin of those stem cells. So Dr. Eastwood, start walking us through some of these ethical questions.
Sure. Well, most of the ethical issues and moral issues relate to our ideas of when life begins. And that, of course, relates to the use of embryonic stem cells, which we already said are taken from five-day-old embryos.
Mm-hmm.
That's 5 days after conception. So if we believe that life begins at conception, that could be a problem. Even if we believe that the potential for life, even though life may not actually begin at that time, but potential for life begins at that time, that could be a problem for people.
And let's make sure that we understand that that's only a problem for the pluripotent turn into everything cells, not for the multipotent that have been taken from the blood or the skin or a bone. Is that correct, Dr. Zuber?
I can't speak for everybody, but I think that's usually what people consider.
But there is a little twist that we already talked about, I think, earlier, and that is if we take an adult stem cell and genetically manipulate it so it regresses to behave like it is or were a embryonic stem cell, then does that make it an embryonic stem cell?
I see.
It now has the potential to make a human being.
Perhaps.
So if it's been regressed, now we're starting to sound a little bit like, you know, the movies, where you're talking about turning something, creating something that wasn't there to start with. You know, is that human beings creating life in a different way that God didn't intend? And that's the question, isn't it?
I think, though, we have to qualify this discussion, because such a regressed stem cell isn't going to turn into a human being by itself. It has to be implanted. It has to have all the scaffolding around it, the cells that will develop into a placenta, which are not there.
And couldn't be there.
It could not be there unless we did something.
It's not like we can stick them in a jar and they're going to grow into human
beings. That's exactly right.
All right. So
if we put them in a jar, they'd die.
They would. Okay. Well, and I suppose the question is, shouldn't we might as well use them? Why did we create them if we weren't going to? Are there other ethical issues involved?
Well, I think there are ethical issues that apply to all stem cells, and I think for completeness we ought to talk about that. Currently, the way stem cell therapy looks like it's headed, we could raise questions of distribution. Are stem cell therapies going to be available to everybody? I mean, these are general bioethical questions.
And some of that question has to do with who can afford it and
who can
can't.
Afford it, who can't.
Yeah, because I've got to think that this kind of thing is very expensive.
Very expensive. And then also, it's, again, a general question, what is the good versus the risk of these things? These are, you know, whenever give a medication, but certainly they apply to stem cell therapies.
And with some of those questions about who it would be available to, would it also be judgments on society? And we've talked about this before. You know, do we supply them to a prisoner, perhaps, who's in prison on a life sentence, or versus someone who... you know, a child who has cancer, you know, that kind of, we've run into those ethical questions before.
Right.
Okay.
And of course, we always want to make sure that people receiving any kind of therapy, including stem cell therapy, are doing so in an informed way. This has to do with the issue of autonomy and informed consent.
Okay. Very good. Dr. Zuber, how often do you run into ethical questions in your lab?
In my lab, never. We work with amphibians. We work with frogs. And like I said, we work with pluripotent cells from a frog embryo.
Okay.
That's about, you know, 12 hours old. And do our experiments try to convert those into the retinal cells. So as far as working with embryonic stem cells, as either human or mouse or whatever, we don't work with those cells. We're trying to do the next step, trying to say once we're provided with those cells, how can we convert them into those multipotent retinal stem cells?
I see. Some of the important questions that surround the answers to the ethical questions, and of course, all we're trying to do is create the questions for people to think about. Some of those questions, correct me if I'm wrong, when does life begin? Mm-hmm. And that's something we have to answer for ourselves, isn't it?
I think it is. Some people think life begins at conception, mm-hmm. at the union of the sperm and egg. Some mm-hmm. people think life begins at implantation, which is actually several days after conception. Mm-hmm. Implantation meaning the combined sperm, egg, the young embryo, implants in the uterus. Some people think life begins at fetal viability, which is probably around 24 weeks. Some people think life begins at birth.
The question about when life begins, that really is at the heart of the stem cell controversies and ethics. And it actually makes me ask a question that I think maybe many of our listeners are asking, and that is, if I understand that life does begin at conception, and yet I also understand the promise of stem cells and what it can do, is there a way I can believe in both? And I'm not going to ask you to answer that question right now. Instead, I'm going to leave it there because next month we're going to pick up where we left off. But we also want listeners to know, Dr. Eastwood, you're going to be at Oasis.
I'm going to be out at Oasis at Shopping Town Mall at 10:30 in the morning on Wednesday, July 8, talking about this very subject. I think the title of my topic is something like The Promise and Peril of Stem Cell Therapy.
Ah, it sounds excellent, and I'm sure many of our listeners will want to attend. Well, Dr. Michael Zuber, I hope you can come back next month.
Definitely.
That would be great. And Dr. Eastwood, thank you again so much. And listeners, we are going to take a break. Please stay with us. This is SUNY Upstate Medical University's HealthLink on Air on 570 WSYR.